I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. We take these big, sometimes really technical subjects and boil them down to what you really need to know. Today we're tackling something that, okay, sounds niche, pesticide application equipment, calibration, and dilution. Stick with us, though. Our mission isn't, you know, to get you certified or anything. It's about understanding why being super precise here is so incredibly important. We're pulling out the key bits from some pretty dense material. And here's the question. Why should you care about something so technical? Well, it turns out it's vital for our health, the environment, and, yeah, even your wallet. Let's dive in.
It's interesting. Calibration. It sounds complex, but really it just means all those little checks and adjustments you do, you know, making absolutely sure you're putting down the correct amount of pesticide for the area you're treating. It's about knowing exactly what your sprayer is doing.
Okay, let's unpack this then. Why is calibration so much more than just, you know, a good idea?
Oh, it's absolutely essential. And the reasons, well, they touch on so many critical areas. First off, the big one, effective pest control. It's like medicine, right? Too little, it doesn't work. Pests might even develop resistance.
Mean you might have to spray again.
Exactly. Costly reapplication, maybe crop loss if it fails. Getting that dose precise ensures the pesticide actually does its job effectively. Then you've got huge environmental concerns. If you're not calibrated right, you're likely applying too much.
And that extra stuff has to go somewhere.
Precisely. It can drift, get into water sources, surface water, groundwater, even contaminate the air. That puts people, livestock, beneficial insects, wildlife, all at risk. Sticking to those label rates, which accurate calibration helps you do, is really your main line of defense environmentally.
Okay, so effectiveness, environment.
Yeah.
What else?
Well, you also need to think about protecting treated surfaces. Applying too much, higher than the label says, can actually damage what you're trying to protect. Things like phytotoxicity, that's basically injuring the plant itself. Or you might get staining, even corrosion on surfaces or equipment. And of course, there's preventing waste of resources. Pesticide is expensive. Time is money. Fuel, labor. It all adds up.
Right.
Poor calibration just throws all that away. Plus, it puts unnecessary wear and tear on your gear. And finally, don't forget the legal concerns. This is serious stuff.
Liability, you mean?
Absolutely. Applicators can be held liable, legally responsible for injuries or damage from improper application. If your equipment isn't calibrated properly, you could face criminal charges, civil lawsuits, big fines. It's not something to take lightly.
Wow. So it really cascades, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's not just about killing weeds or bugs. It's safety, efficiency, the environment, legal responsibility. The whole package.
That's exactly it. The stakes are really high.
Okay, so the stakes are high, but getting this precision right.
Right.
Are we talking super complex, expensive technology here? What's actually in the calibrator's toolkit?
You know, that's often the surprising part. It's really not about needing some kind of futuristic gadget. It's more about using a set of pretty standard, accessible tools very, very carefully.
Like what sort of things?
Well, you definitely need a stopwatch, a good measuring tape, one that won't stretch, maybe 100 feet or so. For liquids, you need a calibrated container, like a quart jug marked clearly in ounces. For dry stuff, granules and whatnot, you'll need a small, accurate scale, maybe something that handles 5 or 10 pounds precisely.
Okay, basic measurement gear.
Right. And then a simple pocket calculator is handy. An accurate pressure gauge for your sprayer is crucial. Something to measure flow rate. That could be a proper flow meter, or honestly, even just a carefully marked 5-gallon bucket can work.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and don't forget simple stuff like colored plastic flagging tape for marking off distances in the field. And one thing I absolutely have to stress, always, always use the right PPE. Chemical-resistant gloves, eye protection, whatever the pesticide label requires. You're potentially handling residues during calibration, safety first.
It's kind of fascinating, isn't it? That level of critical accuracy comes down to using these fairly basic, practical tools with real diligence. The human element is still key.
Absolutely. Precision comes from the process, not just fancy tech.
So let's dig into liquid sprayers specifically. This seems like where a lot of the complexity lies. You mentioned four core factors you have to measure.
That's right. For liquid sprayers, it really boils down to four key variables you need to nail down. If you think about the basic idea, it's gallons per acre, flow rate divided by your land rate.
And land rate is?
Speed times your swath width, how wide you're spraying. So the four pillars you need to measure accurately are tank capacity, travel speed, flow rate, and swath width.
Okay, let's take the first one, tank capacity. Why can't you just, you know, look at the sticker on the tank? Seems like the manufacturer would know how big it is.
You'd think so, wouldn't you? But no, you really can't just trust the manufacturer's stated capacity.
Why not?
Well, often those numbers are estimates, or maybe the total volume, not the usable volume. You've got hoses, pumps, filters, internal fittings. All that stuff takes up space inside the tank.
So the actual amount you can fill and spray is less.
Exactly. And even a small difference there can throw off your mix calculations significantly. The only way to know for sure is to measure it yourself.
How do you do that accurately?
You put the sprayer on level ground, make sure the tank is completely empty, and then you start adding clean water in measured amounts. Mm-hmm. Using a flow meter or just a calibrated bucket, you keep track until the tank is truly full, right up to the point it would be before spraying.
Okay.
And while you're at it, it's really smart to calibrate your sight gauge if it has one, or make a marked dipstick. Put marks on it for, say, every 5 or 10 gallons, depending on the tank size. Makes mixing much easier later.
Makes sense. Measure it once, mark it well. Okay, second pillar, travel speed. I'm guessing the tractor speedometer isn't good enough here either.
Definitely not. Tractor speedos can be notoriously inaccurate. Think about it. Tires slip differently on grass versus cultivated soil, right?
Here.
And tire pressure, or even just slightly different tire sizes, can make a huge difference. We're talking errors of up to 30% sometimes between indicated speed and actual ground speed.
30%. Wow. So how do you measure the real speed?
You have to measure it under the actual conditions you'll be spraying in. Same field, same load in the sprayer, if that affects things. You mark off a known distance, maybe 200, 300 feet for better accuracy. A fun fact, sometimes people use multiples of 88 feet because traveling 88 feet in 60 seconds is exactly 1 mile per hour.
Huh, neat trick.
Then you just time yourself driving that distance at your normal spraying gear and RPM. Do it 2 or 3 times, average the time, make a note of your throttle setting and gear.
And then calculate miles per hour from feet and seconds.
Exactly. Convert seconds to minutes, calculate feet per minute, then convert that to miles per hour. You can even double check with GPS these days, but the stopwatch method is reliable. It sounds basic, but speed variations are a huge source of application errors.
Great. Tank volume, travel speed.
Uh-huh.
Now, flow rate. That's the liquid actually coming out of the nozzles. You said even new nozzles can vary.
Oh, yeah. They're manufactured to tight tolerances, but there can still be slight differences,
yeah.
Maybe up to 5% variation even when new. And of course, nozzles wear out over time. Abrasion from the spray mix, corrosion, their output increases as they wear.
And pressure gauges might not be spot on either.
Right. So you need to check the actual output. The most common way, especially for boom sprayers or handhelds, is the collection method.
How does that work?
You run the sprayer with clean water at your normal operating pressure. Then you collect the output from each individual nozzle for a set time, say 30 seconds or a minute, using a calibrated measuring jar.
Each one separately.
Yes, that's key. Because you're looking for consistency. The rule of thumb is the output from any single nozzle shouldn't vary by more than 5% from the average of all nozzles.
And what if one is way off?
If any nozzle is putting out more than, say, 10% above the manufacturer's rated output, or if the variation across the boom is too high, those nozzles need to be replaced.
And you mentioned if you replace one.
Right. If you replace even one worn nozzle, you really should recheck the flow from all the nozzles on that boom section. Changing one can slightly alter the pressure and flow to the others.
Got it. Consistency is key. What about sprayers where collecting from each nozzle is hard, like air blast sprayers?
Good point. For those or high pressure sprayers, you often use the measured release method. You fill the tank very precisely to a known mark. Then you run the sprayer for a set time, maybe 5 or 10 minutes under normal operating conditions. Then you carefully measure exactly how much water it takes to refill the tank back to that original mark. Repeat it a couple of times, average the amount used, and calculate your gallons per minute from that.
Okay, tank, speed, flow. That leaves swath width. How wide an area are you actually treating with each pass?
This totally depends on the sprayer type, but again, you need to measure the actual effective width. Don't just guess.
So for a standard boom sprayer?
For a boom, it's generally the distance between the outermost nozzles plus one nozzle spacing. But you need to measure the actual nozzle spacing on your boom. And crucially, check your boom height. It needs to be right to get the correct spray pattern overlap between nozzles. Usually fan nozzles are angled slightly, maybe 10 degrees, along the boom for better overlap. And make sure the boom is level. An uneven boom means uneven application and more drift potential.
What about other types, like spraying in bands?
For banded applications, your swath width is the sum of the widths of the individual bands you're spraying, not including the unsprayed spaces between them.
And say an air blast sprayer in an orchard.
Typically, that's determined by the row spacing. If you're spraying both sides of the row in one pass, the swath width is the distance between the tree rows. If you're only spraying one side, it's half the row width. Best to measure several rows and average it.
Backpack sprayers.
For those, or controlled droplet applicators, you usually do a test spray on a surface like pavement or cardboard, maintain your typical walking speed and nozzle height, and then simply measure the width of the pattern left on the ground.
Okay, so the message is clear.
Yeah.
Measure, don't assume, for all four factors.
Exactly. Tank, speed, flow, width. Get those right and you're well on your way.
So now you've got these four critical measurements. Tank capacity, your actual travel speed, the flow rate per nozzle or overall, and the effective swath width. How do you put that all together to figure out exactly how much pesticide concentrate to add to the tank?
Right. This is where the math comes in, using all those numbers you just carefully measured. It depends slightly on how the pesticide label tells you to apply it, usually either per acre or sometimes per square foot.
Let's take the common one first.
Yeah.
Applying per acre.
Okay. So using your speed and swath width, you first calculate how many acres you're covering per minute. Then, using your measured flow rate, gallons per minute, you figure out how many gallons of spray mix you're applying per acre. Gallons per minute divided by acres per minute gives you gallons per acre.
Okay, got the application rate.
Yep. Then you take your measured tank capacity in gallons, divide it by your gallons per acre rate, and that tells you how many acres you can treat with one full tank.
Acres per tank full.
Exactly. And the final step is easy. Look at the pesticide label for the recommended amount of product per acre, say 1 quart per acre. Multiply that by the number of acres your tank covers, and boom, that's how much concentrate goes into the tank.
Makes sense. Step by step. What if the label rate is per square foot, like for smaller areas?
Similar logic, just smaller units. You calculate square feet treated per minute, speed x swath width. Then you figure out the volume of spray applied per square foot, flow rate, square feet per minute. Then calculate how many square feet a full tank will cover, tank volume per square foot. Finally, check the label's dosage rate. Maybe it's ounces per 1,000 square feet. You calculate how much product you need for the total square footage your tank covers. Sometimes labels give rates per acre, even for small areas. So you might need to convert that acre rate down to a square foot rate first.
Seems like keeping track of the units is really important there.
Absolutely. And, you know, there are handy calibration worksheets available, often from extension services or manufacturers. They guide you through these steps right there in the field, which really helps prevent calculation errors.
That's practical. Okay, so you've done all this, you've calibrated perfectly for these conditions, but what happens when things change? Maybe move to a field with much denser foliage, or the plants are spaced differently. Do you have to start all over? How do you adjust the output rate?
That's a really important practical question, because yes, conditions change. Foliage density, different plant spacing, maybe the specific needs of the area, or even just compensating for nozzle wear over time. You often need to tweak your application rate.
So how do you do that without a full recalibration?
You've basically got three main ways to adjust your sprayer's output.
Mm.
The simplest is often changing speed.
Faster or slower?
Right. Slow down, and you apply more spray per acre because you're covering less ground in the same amount of time. Speed up, and you apply less.
Seems easy enough. Any catches?
Well, there are limits. Going too fast is a really common mistake, and it often leads to poor coverage. The spray just doesn't have time to penetrate or settle properly. But going too slow can cause problems too, like runoff, which wastes pesticide and can increase environmental risk. And obviously, it takes more time and costs more in fuel and labor.
And you mentioned orchard sprayers specifically.
Yeah, with air blast sprayers, like in orchards, increasing your ground speed too much might mean the fan doesn't have enough time to actually blow the pesticide effectively deep into the tree canopy. So speed is easy to adjust, but you have to be mindful of coverage quality.
Okay, what's option two?
The most effective way to make a significant change in output is usually changing nozzle size. Put in nozzles with larger openings, you get more flow. Smaller openings, less flow. Simple as that.
But does that mess anything else up?
It can. Changing nozzle size will likely change your system pressure if you don't adjust anything else. It can also change the droplet size and the spray pattern itself. So if you swap nozzles, you definitely need to recheck your flow rate and pattern, basically. Recalibrate that part.
Right. It's a more fundamental change. And the third way?
The third way is changing output pressure. You adjust the pressure regulator, turn the pressure up, flow increases slightly, turn it down, flow decreases slightly.
Only slightly.
Yeah, this is maybe the most surprising part for many people. Pressure has a less dramatic effect than you might think. To actually double your spray volume just by using pressure, you'd have to increase the pressure four times.
Four times? That sounds like a lot.
It usually is. Often it's way outside the pump's normal operating range or the nozzle's recommended pressure range. Plus, cranking up the pressure creates much finer droplets, which drastically increases the risk of spray drift. And lowering the pressure too much can make the nozzles perform poorly, giving you a bad spray pattern.
So pressure is really just for fine-tuning, not big changes.
Exactly. Small adjustments, yes. Major changes in rate. Look at speed or nozzles first.
That's a really useful breakdown. Now, let's shift from liquids for a minute. How does all this apply to calibrating equipment for dry pesticides, granules, dusts, that sort of thing? Is it the same game or are there different rules?
It's a similar game, but with some definitely different rules, some unique challenges.
Like what?
The big difference is the material itself. Granules aren't uniform like water. They vary in size, shape, density, even surface texture, depending on the product. And all of that affects how they flow out of the applicator.
So one setting won't work for all products?
Absolutely not. You must calibrate separately for each specific granular product you plan to use. And another big factor is humidity.
Humidity. How does that matter?
High of humidity can make some granules clump together or flow more slowly. Low humidity might make them flow faster or become more dusty. So if the weather changes significantly, especially the humidity, you really need to recheck your calibration.
Okay, so product-specific and weather-dependent calibration. What about safety?
Same principle as liquids, maybe even more critical for some dry forms. Always follow the label for PPE. Dusts, especially, often require respiratory protection, plus the standard chemical-resistant gloves and eye protection. Don't take chances.
Got it. So what are the key variables you're measuring for dry applicators? Is it still speed, flow, and width?
Essentially, yes. The three main variables are travel speed, output rate, and swath width. Travel speed is measured exactly the same way as for liquid sprayers' timed runs over a known distance.
And output rate. How do you measure pounds per minute instead of gallons per minute?
There are a few ways. You could lay down a plastic sheet or tarp of a known size, run the applicator over it, and then carefully collect and weigh the granules that landed on the tarp. Or, for applicators with multiple outlets, you might be able to disconnect the tubes and collect the output from all ports into a container for a set amount of time, then weigh it. Another way, maybe less precise, is to fill the hopper completely, run the applicator for a measured time or distance, and then carefully measure how much product it takes to refill the hopper back to full. The tricky part there is getting granules to settle consistently in the hopper.
Okay, weigh the output one way or another, and swath width for granules.
Again, measure the actual effective width under field conditions. You might need to operate the spreader over a dark cloth or pavement to see the pattern clearly. Or you can place shallow pans or trays across the path of the applicator, run it, and then weigh the granules collected in each pan to see how wide the distribution is and if it's even.
Seems like seeing the pattern is key.
It is. And just like liquids, if you're doing banded application or soil injection with granules, your swath width is the sum of the individual bandwidths. One other important thing with dry applicators. How speed affects output depends on the type of drive mechanism.
But also,
some applicators, like many hand-push spreaders or certain motorized ones, have a fixed output rate. The metering system turns at a constant speed regardless of how fast you walk or drive. For these, your ground speed directly changes how much is applied per acre. Go faster, apply less per acre, go slower, apply more.
Okay, so speed control is critical there.
Yes. But other types, common on larger equipment, have a ground wheel drive. The metering mechanism is linked to the wheels, so it turns faster as you drive faster.
Ah, so the output rate increases with speed.
Exactly. The clever part is, because the output rate increases proportionally with speed, the amount applied per acre stays almost the same, regardless of your speed, within reason. For those, you adjust the application rate mainly by changing the gate opening size or sometimes changing drive gears.
That's a really important distinction depending on the equipment type.
It makes a big difference in how you operate and adjust it.
Okay, this leads to another point. We're talking about applying gallons per acre or pounds per acre. But that's the total product, right? Not the actual poison, the chemical doing the work.
Mm-hmm.
How does the active ingredient factor into all this?
Excellent point. That's a layer of calculation that's absolutely crucial for accuracy and for comparing different products. Pesticides aren't pure chemicals, they're formulations.
Meaning they have fillers and other stuff mixed in.
Exactly. Only a certain percentage of what's in the jug or bag is the actual chemical that controls the pest, the active ingredient, or AI. The rest might be carriers, solvents, spreaders, stabilizers, things like that.
So why calculate the AI?
Because the amount of active ingredient applied per acre is usually the critical factor for effectiveness and for following regulations. Different products might have the same active ingredient, but in different concentrations. Calculating the AI lets you make sure you're applying the same effective dose, regardless of which specific product formulation you choose.
Where do you find that information?
It's always on the product label. The label will state the percentage of active ingredient by weight. For liquids, it will also usually tell you the pounds of active ingredient per gallon of the formulated product. You use these numbers in your calculations.
So it ensures you're comparing apples to apples, effectively.
Precisely. It's about the dose of the actual chemical, not just the volume of the mix.
Labels sometimes mention other things, too, like percentage solutions or PPM.
Right. Sometimes, especially for smaller scale mixing or specific uses like tank cleaning or maybe certain greenhouse applications, the label might call for a percentage solution. That means mixing the product with water or another carrier to achieve a specific concentration, usually on a weight-to-weight or weight-to-volume basis, like a 1% solution. And parts per million, PPM, is just another way to express very dilute concentrations. It's often used for things like post-harvest treatments or maybe chemigation. It's directly related to percentage, for example. 10,000 PPM is the same as a 1% solution. 100 PPM is 0.01%. They're just different units for expressing concentration.
So more ways the label dictates precision.
Always comes back to reading and understanding that label carefully.
Okay, we've covered a lot of manual measurement, careful calculation. Does modern technology make this all obsolete? What about things like sprayer monitors and rate controllers? Do they handle all this automatically?
That's the dream, isn't it? And technology has come a long way. System monitors and controllers are definitely becoming more common, and they add a huge layer of precision and convenience. But, and this is a big but, they absolutely do not eliminate the need for good old-fashioned inspection and manual calibration.
They don't replace it entirely.
Not at all. Think of them as sophisticated assistants. A monitor just watches things. It measures your travel speed using GPS or radar, checks the spray pressure, maybe measures the flow rate. It can alert you if something drifts outside your target range.
Okay, so it tells you if something's off.
Right. A rate controller or spray controller goes one step further. It's a monitor that's also connected to an automated control valve, usually on the pressure line. You tell it your target application rate, say 15 gallons per acre. It constantly compares your actual rate, based on speed and flow pressure, to the target rate. And it automatically adjusts the spray pressure up or down slightly to keep the application rate steady, even if your speed changes a bit.
That sounds pretty smart. So what's the catch? Why still calibrate manually?
The catch is, these systems are only as accurate as the sensors they rely on. Is the GPS speed accurate? Is the flow meter reading correctly? Is the pressure sensor accurate? Those sensors themselves need to be calibrated.
Ah, so you have to calibrate the calibrator.
You got it. You still need to manually check the nozzle output with a collection test periodically to make sure the flow meter reading matches reality, especially as nozzles wear. You still need to verify your actual swath width. You still need to confirm your actual tank volume. And crucially, the controller can't see if a nozzle is clogged or if the boom is bouncing or if the wind has picked up and you're suddenly getting drift.
So the operator still needs to be watching, thinking.
Absolutely. Don't assume the monitors are foolproof. Technology is a fantastic tool for consistency and logging data, but it doesn't replace the operator's eyes, experience, and the fundamental need to ensure the system is set up correctly through manual checks and calibration. Diligence is still key.
That's a really important perspective. So, wrapping this all up, it seems the core message is that whether you're using basic equipment or high-tech gear, accurate calibration is just fundamental. It's the foundation for everything else, for making sure the pesticide works, for protecting yourself and the environment, for staying legal, and for not wasting money.
That sums it up perfectly. It requires being meticulous, measuring carefully, understanding how your specific equipment behaves, and doing the math right.
It's not just about following steps, but understanding why each step matters.
Exactly. True precision, even with all the technology, ultimately depends on the person running the equipment, their critical thinking, their diligence, making sure they understand the principles and apply them responsibly every single time they spray.
So as we finish, here's something to think about. We've just done a deep dive into the intense precision needed for something like pesticide application. Consider how that level of focus, that dedication to calibration and accuracy, might apply elsewhere. Where in your own work, or even your life, could applying that kind of calibration mindset, really measuring, understanding the variables, ensuring things are precisely on target, lead to surprisingly better outcomes? What are you calibrating in your world? Something to ponder.